Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo 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 Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I don't know where we are. There it seems to say 37 or 36.
36 maybe.
Okay. 36. Tasyaiva chante kalpo bud.
Tasyaiva chante kalpo bud.
Yam padma vichakshate. Yad tadir nabi sarasa. Asi loka saro ruham. Tasyaiva chante kalpo bud. Yam padma vichakshate. Tad tadir nabi sarasa. Asi loka saro ruham. Tasya. Of the Brahma Kalpa. Eva. Certainly. Cha. Also. Ante. At the end of. Kalpaha. Millennium. Abhut came into existence. Yam, which? Padmam, Padma, Abhichakshate, is called. Yat, in which? Hadehe, of the personality of Godhead. Nabi, in the navel. Sarasaha, from the reservoir of water. Asit, there was. Loka, of the universe. Sororuham, lotus. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The millennium which followed the first Brahma millennium is known as the Padma Kalpa. Because of that millennium, the universal lotus flower grew out of the navel reservoir of water of the personality of Godhead, Hari. Purport. The millennium following the Brahma Kalpa is known as the Padma Kalpa. Because the universal lotus grows in that millennium. The Padma Kalpa is also called the Pitri Kalpa in certain Puranas. Okay, I'm going to read the next verse too. Ayam tu katita kalpo dutiyasyapi bharata vara iti vikyato yatrasi chukaro harihi. O descendant of Bharata, the first millennium is in the second half of the life of Brahma. It is also known as the Varaha millennium, because the personality of Godhead appeared in that millennium as the hog incarnation. Purport. The different millenniums known as the Brahma, Padma, and Varaha kalpas appear a little puzzling for the layman. There are some scholars who think these kalpas to be one and the same. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the Brahma Kalpa in the beginning of the first half appears to be the Padma Kalpa. We can, however, simply abide by the text and understand that the present millennium is in the second half of the duration of the life of Brahma. The duration of the universe's existence is very long. And we're not interested in mundane history. One year's worth of mundane history, not to speak of quadrillions of years. but the interest we have in this measurement of time and the history of what occurred at that time is that the real focus of that history, the real interesting part, is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself appears within this material world. And it's on this scale of time that his appearances occur. He doesn't appear every week, or every year, or every thousand years. He appears once in the day of Brahma. Some avatars appear every manvantara. I think the Vamana avatar, although it's one of the major avatars, it appears very frequently. It appears in every single manvantara. Lord Nrsimha appears several times in the day of Brahma, five times are mentioned, five different appearances of Lord Nrsimhadev. They're probably in different kalpas, actually. And then other avatars only appear once in Brahma's life, even, or at least once in a kalpa. So you get names like manvantara avatars, kalpa avatars. An avatar that appears in each kalpa once in a day of Brahma is a kalpa avatar. And then there are other avatars that are even less frequent, maybe only once in the whole lifetime of Brahma. So if you want to understand the history of the descents of the Lord into the material world, you should have some concept of this larger scale of time. If we measure history only in thousands of years, if we think that history doesn't go back more than 3 or 4,000 BC, and before that people, human beings, were living in caves, dressed in bearskins, beating each other over the head with clubs and mumbling some incoherent words that didn't have any language. If that's our concept of history, then it doesn't go back more than, at the most, 7,000 years. And we're not going to be able to know much about the avatars of the Lord. We only have two major avatars within that time scan. Of course, they're the most important ones, Krishna himself and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even if you can't understand history more than 500 years ago, Desai Gormohan cannot imagine that there was a time when they didn't have trains and airplanes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now you could, but a few years ago you couldn't. I told you that, Krishna's time didn't have those things. Didn't believe me that they didn't have. But 150 years ago, electricity was not harnessed. We didn't have electric appliances 150 years ago. Electricity was just used for parlor games, the static electricity. So things change over the course of time. But even if you only understand history in terms of a few hundred years, at least the avatar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here within our recent history. You may think that what could have happened 5,000 years ago, what's said to have happened 5,000 years ago, couldn't have actually happened 5,000 years ago. Nobody knows what was happening 5,000 years ago. It must just be a story. Many people will think like that. But when you tell them, here's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was born at Navadvip on February the 14th, 1486 A.D., whatever day it was, and there's historical records of it, then they have to accept that. That's recordable history. We're talking about history that goes back quadrillions of years. For this, you have to have a broader vision. So the Bhagavatam is here, instilling in us a broader perspective of time. What kind of time frame we have to think in order to understand the appearances of the Lord. Of course, we don't need to know the details. Simple people who don't know how to write their names can understand the avatars of the Lord. They may not understand the details of time. But the problem is with people who are too smart and therefore won't accept the Shastric version, because they think they understand everything. What they understand is their narrow world. So-called intelligent people have everything figured out within a very, very narrow frame. And outside of their little well, they don't know anything. And this is the problem. Better a person is simple. He doesn't pretend to know everything. When he pretends to know everything, then he gets in trouble. So, at least the Bhagavatam is telling us this, you don't know everything. There's things you don't know. Here they are. We have to have that broader perspective. We have to accept that there's a world outside of our little well. Accept the message of the Acharyas. Otherwise, we'll never understand. And without understanding, we won't have faith. We won't be attracted to Krishna. We'll think he's just another story. Although this is mundane, Plato, the philosopher Plato, I guess speaking on behalf of Socrates, tells him what he calls a myth, a story, an allegory of the cave. That suppose, he said suppose, just, you know, he didn't pretend that it's history, just suppose that there were people who were kept prisoners in a cave, dark cave, and there was some fire giving light. It was kept behind them, but they were chained so they could only see the wall of the cave. And the fire behind them was projecting light onto that wall. And so they saw their own shadows. And they also saw some mysterious other shadows, which were actually the shadows of people outside the cave, walking past the cave. They saw those shadows on the walls, but they never could figure out what they were. So they were living in ignorance, like most of us. But somebody once escaped from the prison, from the cave. He got free from his shackles and ran outside. First thing that happened is he was blinded by the sun. He couldn't, at first, tolerate the light of the sun, and he couldn't see anything for a while. He finally became accustomed to the sunlight after some difficulty and was able to see that there was a world outside there, and that those strange shadows they couldn't figure out on the wall were actually what was going on outside the cave. And he was very excited. He went back, ran back into the cave to tell everybody else what their actual situation was and that there's a world outside the cave. And they didn't want to hear it, and they killed him. This is the story of, told by Plato. That, anyway, one message to be extracted from that is that the preachers of the message of the Bhagavatam are trying to give people a broader perspective on life, and people most of the time don't want to hear it. They don't want to be taken, they've been living in the cave all their life, they feel very comfortable there, and they don't want their life upset by broader concepts. They don't want to give up their comfortable, narrow framework. And they may not kill you, but at least they're not going to listen to you. The mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to preach to everybody, not to consider. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not consider who's fit and who's unfit. So in preaching, we try to give the message to everyone, but understanding that not everybody can, hardly anybody can understand anything for the spiritual. So you have to give it to them in simple, small doses, and not expect that most people are going to respond, are going to accept. But we try. We speak the message of Bhagavatam, go everywhere if we can and do that, and let Krishna provide the results, if any. A preacher cannot be fruitive. He cannot demand results in a certain amount of time. Then he'll be frustrated. He'll give up. Successful preacher is one who's not attached to results. Because why should people want to believe this? These fantastic stories of strange creatures living in strange times, completely foreign times. We don't understand that the world changes over the course of time. the world we're living in now, and the world that was this human civilization that was here a million years ago are very different. People were different 5,000 years ago. The world was different. Things that are unimaginable were happening. People who you could not even imagine their powers, their strange opulences, they were present on the planet 5,000 years ago. Not only Krishna's avatars and his empowered devotees, but even mundane people, demons and others, had great powers, things that we cannot even accept as anything but stories nowadays. That was 5,000 years ago. The world was different. Even today we see people who live in a poor place, in a place where the culture is not very rich, they cannot really imagine what's going on in other countries, how people are living elsewhere. To them it's mythology or just something they see on television. But others who have grown up in these other countries or have been there, they know. They've seen it. Similarly, in the framework of time, the world of 5,000 years ago is much different and practically inconceivable to modern people. What does being in the world 2 million years ago, at the time of Lord Ramachandra? When Krishna was fighting his enemies, the fighting was pretty rough and dirty because it was the end of Dwapara Yuga. Good qualities had been diminished almost to nothing. When Ramachandra fought against Ravana 2 million years before, it was a different story. The human civilization was much more on a higher level of culture. And therefore, Ravana was a civilized enemy. Ravana and his brothers. Who was it? Ravana sent... was it Kumbhakarna? What he said to do a yajna, and if he finished the yajna, he would.
Indrajit.
It was his son.
Yeah.
Indrajit, his oldest son?
Yeah.
I guess the other sons were already killed by Ram. And the last thing that he tried, he sent Indrajit away from Lanka to perform a yajna somewhere that would have made him undefeatable. And how did they trick him to come back?
Interrupted the yajna.
Okay, they just disturbed the yajna. Yeah, ruined the yajna, and then they were able to kill Indrajit. But this is a civilized enemy. You know, they didn't resort to cheating like they did in the Kurukshetra battle in Dwapara Yuga. They resorted to Vedic sacrifice to become invincible. Ravana was a civilized enemy, a civilized demon. Times changed. The world was different back then. People behaved differently. They behaved better than they behaved in Dwapara Yuga. Well, to speak how compared to how people behave today. So you have to have historical perspective, even if you're a Hare Krishna devotee. You can't ignore history, although we're not interested in mundane history so much. Maybe in Gurukul they force us to learn something about it. Prabhupada did not. Think that it should be emphasized too much, learning about mundane history. Just learn about something about the history of your own country, the country you're living in, a little bit, that's all. We're interested primarily in the spiritual history, in the Puranic history, which has spiritual value. Devotees have to have a perspective of time. We have to understand how the world is different in different ages. And we can break out of our narrow framework. You know, our conditioning of being American or Russian or Chinese, and we can't see anything, you know, we can't be full-fledged members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness because we have got a narrow, nationalistic, chauvinistic, racist consciousness. So by understanding how the world is different in different times and places, we can see that there's something beyond our little cave, our little well, and have a broader perspective. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, O Lord Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.